Hey, it's Kate.
Hey, it's Joanna.
Do you like women who laugh like Roseanne?
Do you like jumping in a pool full of lemon juice covered in paper cuts?
Do you like loading a bowl at the end of a hard day? If you answered yes to one or more of these questions, you should listen to Butt Stuff on the Journey into Comics Network.
The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Hey, this is Josh Richmond, and you are listening to the Voice of Survival podcast, exclusively on the Journey into Comics Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? As the intro said, I'm your host, Nate. This is the Voice of Survival podcast, episode number 5, and today I have probably my favorite person in the whole entire world on the show.
Aw, gee.
And I'm so excited to talk to you today about your story. Before I introduce my guest, I'll do a little lead up, as I typically do, about how we met. I will take you guys back almost exactly 3 years ago, which is super crazy that we're recording this at this point in time. But it was probably around this time, actually, that we were making this deal that kind of sets everything in motion. So my buddy had said, hey, you have a podcast with Brando, and Brando likes video games. I know someone who's selling a bunch of awesome video games. Brandon should buy them. And I was like, yes, let's make this deal happen, you know. And the person he sent me to was not who I was expecting. Like, he's just like, I just know this chick. And I was like, okay, whatever, cool, it's whatever. And then he sent me to your page, and it was like, okay, I friended you. And I was just like, hey, I hear you have some video games available. I've got this guy, he's into video games. And it's like the black market of video game dealing, you know, via Facebook. But we made the deal that it was gonna eventually happen. Brandon would come up, as any Journey into Comics fans know. I think it was the Adventures in, it was episode 11, I think. That's, my memory's pretty bad, but I think it was like episode 11 that Brandon and Rob and Wes were up here, and we went to Bombers, and we were there, and I was like, this person's going to flake. I just felt like, I was like, maybe they're not going to show, you know, because I feel like anytime I have something that's like that good of like a situation, I'm helping my friend out in a really great situation, I'm gonna find some way to fuck it up, and the universe finds ways to fuck me over. So I was just anticipating the absolute worst. However, you arrived, and it's not the worst. It was kind of cold out. If you'll remember, it was windy, like today, actually. A little overcast, like today, surprisingly. But we do this video game deal in the parking lot. And I just wanted to say that it's weird how one day of time, right, can change everything. And at this time, I would like to introduce my guest. She is the co-host of Foodies Watching Movies. She is the lead singer of Walk Among Us and dirty piano player for the band. My longtime best friend. Well, it's not really been a long time, but God, it feels like I've known you my whole life.
3 years long.
It's, hey, Veronica, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing? That was a sweet intro.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm doing really good. I get myself like more. This is better there. I was like up on the, now, okay. So,
okay.
You know, I thought about it, and as soon as the Voice of Survival started, it was like, I wanted to kind of plan some things, and like, there were kind of some landmark people that have landmark things, and then like, episode 4 is kind of like this weird bonus, because it's Justin, who I didn't really know that well, per se, but he had been a guest on Journey into Comics a couple times, and, you know, with the hurricane and everything that happened, I thought it was cool to have him on.
Right.
But for episode 5, since day 1, I was like, Veronica is my episode 5. And I don't
why
know.
Why 5?
I don't really know. I think it was just like, in my mind, I knew that if I could get to episode 5 and get you on to do episode 5, mm-hmm. That's going to affect the whole show. I just realized that I had the pop filter on that I don't talk with, but that's fine. It'll be all right, folks.
Whoopsie.
I don't know. I just thought about it, and I told you before we started the show mm-hmm. that the numbers are important to me, kind of. And I don't mean like, oh, my God, we got 40 bajillion downloads or some shit. No, I'm just like, I'm very numeric with things. Like, I love number, like, symmetry and stuff.
Sure, I understand what you're saying.
1331. Mm-hmm. You know, 138 is a number that holds a special place in my heart. There are a couple.
Your numbers guy.
Exactly. And you're someone special to me, so I thought episode five is the perfect time to do it.
Aw, well, thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and, you know, as always, the Voice of Survival podcast is not really about me. I rambled for a couple minutes here. We're going to get into your story, and it's funny because I've known you for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I still have so much to learn about you, though. Like,
well, that's nice.
I mean, I just feel like cracking this open today, it's going to be a treasure trove of interesting stuff I might not have known about you.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if I'm that interesting.
Well, I think you're super interesting. And I mean, you've traveled the world and you've done all sorts of crazy things and been to all sorts of places. And, you know, you're an adventurer. And
well, hot damn, I guess I am.
I admire that. I admire that about you. And I always have. You know, you're just a person that, hey, I'm going on vacation to do this thing, or hey, we should go do this thing, and just travel and fucking go for it. And that's something that I've always wanted to have, but I don't think I've ever had the drive to have. And then I met you, and it's like, well, now, shit, here's the drive, if you know what I'm saying. But I want to go to this part of your journey, because, I mean, we could go right into it and start talking about podcasting and how you found podcasting and all that stuff, and the lead up to you doing Foodies with Me and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We can do that later in the show. Right now, I want to start at somewhere a little more personal for you.
Okay.
I want to know about your musical journey. Like, where does music start for you? Where does the bug get implanted into you to do music? When did you know you could sing? I mean, there's like a million questions I feel like I can ask you just from music alone.
Wow. That's a really loaded question. But
fire away.
Okay. All right. I'm game. Well, I've always been a singer. I started singing when I was little, and I was always such a ham and a performer. That was just my thing. I think my mom still has old VHS tapes of me singing Guns N' Roses as a 3-year-old on my grandma's coffee table. And I just always wanted to be a rocker. That's always what I wanted to do, is just be a musician. And I guess it's just always been the thing. Nothing really else ever did it for me.
Okay, so like, what's the first, are there bands that you're listening to with your mom? I mean, you talk about Guns N' Roses, but like...
Yeah, my mom had a huge influence on me with music, especially in my childhood, being really little. A lot of the things that I remember can be kind of like correlated with home videos of us, just like when they got, like 1990-91, they got a camcorder, and they would just film for hours just them being dumbasses and weirdos and playing with me and playing with my toys. And like, I don't know, I have a very specific soundtrack of my youth that was very heavily influenced by my mom, and she loved shit like Guns N' Roses and The Cure and The Smiths and all sorts of stuff like that. And my dad was a musician. He played guitar when he was young, and he was always playing guitar for me whenever I'd go and stay with him on the weekends and stuff. And I just would sit there and watch him play guitar for like probably an hour or two every weekend that I was with him. And we'd never talk. He'd just keep playing, and I'd just stare at it the whole time. And yeah, they were both very into music, and that made me into music.
Excellent. So you said you kind of have like a soundtrack of your childhood, if you will, like leading mm-hmm. up to a point. What are some of the different like bands that are in that soundtrack for you, and why are they such a fixture? Because, okay, it's obviously, listen, I know, I get it. as a musician myself and growing up in a household that was very musically inclined, mm-hmm. the whole thing with your parents listen to a certain music, you're going to be into it, can be true, but at times it can also have nothing to do with that. You could listen to something your parents listen to and go, eh, not for me. But other stuff, it catches you.
Right.
And I think there's a great importance of, I almost say like character, when there's something about a certain band or a genre that hooks you. You can just see like who a person deep down, you know, really is. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, you know, your musical soundtrack. Just list off some band songs, things that pop into your head. I know one off the top of my head that it's definitely kind of embedded in there because it was recently used in one of my favorite movies, Mr. Blue Sky.
Oh yeah, Yellow.
Yeah, and the Groot scene mm-hmm. in the beginning of Guardians 2. So I just wanted to know, like, what are some other songs that you would put on that list? Maybe make your awesome mix volume 3.
My awesome mix volume 1. Okay. Well, if I'm thinking, am I talking about like my whole youth or this very specific time of like when music started becoming important to me?
When music started, that's a great way to put it. Exactly when music started becoming important to me. When you remembered like...
Okay, I was 3 and I was living in my grandma's house with my mom and my aunt and my other aunt and my uncle and my great grandma. We all lived together in this house and it was magical and wonderful and I have the best memories of that and it's so sweet. And I have tons of home videos that my family has of us just being weirdos, like I said. And I guess if I'm talking about that point in my life, I would definitely put on my mix some Rolling Stones because okay. we had a Mick Jagger poster in our bedroom, me sure. and my mom.
Sure. What Stones, though?
If you stop me up.
Oh, you like, okay, cool.
That's the one I remember from my mom.
Okay.
That's
what
I think
Paint It Black with the Stones. Yeah.
Well, my favorite Rolling Stones song is You Can't Always Get What You Want. And I really like Sympathy for the Devil. Cliche, whatever.
Hey,
don't give a fuck.
Covered by Guns N' Roses, another
That's
flashback
right.
to your childhood.
I was going to say Guns N' Roses, Paradise City is on there. There's a video of me dancing in my grandma's house to Paradise City and just singing it over the chorus over and over because it was the only part that I knew.
I mean, that's what you do when you're little.
Yeah, I'd also put Welcome to the Jungle on there.
Okay.
Because there's a home video of two of my aunts lip syncing to it and dressed up like Axl Rose. And it was so fucking funny. And someday when they give me permission, I'll release it to the world.
Because
it needs to be
it.
Seen. It's pretty great. But anyway. Awesome. You know, I can't think of the name of the band off the top of my head. I guess I'll just go ahead and say The Smiths. My mom really was into The Smiths and The Cure.
Yeah.
Some of those things would be on there. And what else?
There's a really big one that I'm really surprised you haven't said yet.
What is it?
Bowie.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, we could talk all day about
David
Bowie.
We could talk all day about Bowie. Come on. Yeah, that's obvious. Bowie. Who else?
But like, what song? I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, there's so many great David Bowie songs. Is there one that, like, from that moment in time maybe sticks out to you the most?
Yeah, it would be the entire soundtrack from the movie The Labyrinth.
Hey, you have a giant poster of that in your house.
I do. Nathaniel and Sarah got me a beautiful Labyrinth poster, movie poster, that hangs up in my living room.
Yeah.
And what was that for, my birthday?
I actually know that was absolutely... It's funny because... We were talking about this the other day in your kitchen. I like fucked up and I couldn't remember when we got you this knife set.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was either Christmas or my birthday.
It was definitely your birthday though, because we also got you the potato masher and something else.
That's right.
Food related.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
Duh.
But no, we got you the Labyrinth poster for like first Christmas, I think.
Yeah.
I remember hanging it in the weird spot in your house. It looked cool there. But there was no like light or whatever.
Right.
And now it's definitely like a standout piece in your house. You do definitely have a huge love for David Bowie. That is one of the I'm gonna jump forward a little bit and get a little deep here, but
okay.
That is a memory I will never ever forget as long as I live. We were in the house here, you went out for a smoke
mm-hmm.
and you came back in pale. And I was like, oh no, someone in her family died. Like, I was like, this is about to be bad.
Yeah.
And you said, you're like, guys, like David Bowie died. And I was crushed for you because I knew how much he meant to you as an artist, as a person. Didn't you just like months before that, didn't you go to the exhibit they did with Bowie?
I did, yeah. We went up there to go see it, but we missed it. We weren't able to do it. Like, we got there and they were like sold out for the day or whatever, and then we just didn't have the opportunity to go back, so we didn't get to see it. But I took some pictures of the building because it looked really cool up in Chicago, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really terrible night when that happened. I was super sad. It was like a little piece of my youth went, you know.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. Yeah, I loved Bowie.
Yeah.
And I got that David Bowie coloring book.
And, yeah.
We never colored any of it, though.
Well, we got to make copies of it so we don't ruin the book, because we're nerds like that.
Maybe I'll make copies of it and take it to the kids at my preschool.
That's an amazing idea.
They can color Bowie.
That's
instead
amazing.
Of ducks.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have your musical journey that starts and you're living with a lot of your family in one space.
Mm-hmm.
When do you start to get I know you were being a ham and like dancing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing and singing, two different things. And when did you start to have like that early musician mind of confidence, like, I can actually probably put this together if I try a little bit? Like, it was it Disney movies? Is that where it comes from? I've always wanted to know, because it feels like in your timeline, like,
yeah,
like
Disney,
I feel
had
like
a
Little
big
Mermaid
impact
just like
on me.
Lines up. Like,
well, yeah, Little Mermaid, would that come out in like 89? I think it was 89. My Aunt Melissa bought me a VHS copy of The Little Mermaid from when it was originally released. And it even has the artwork, the band artwork, and the castle of the dick.
Yeah, the phallic artwork.
The phallic artwork. Yeah, I still have that. But yeah, Disney movies definitely had a big impact on me when I was little vocally. Like, my favorite Disney movie is Sleeping Beauty, because they had an opera singer cast as the voice of the princess. And that was really where my love of opera started, was with Sleeping Beauty.
See? Right here. I just learned that. I did not know that about you. I was going to ask. That was my next line of questioning, was when, like, people don't know this as much about you as I do. You have a phenomenal opera voice.
Aww,
I've been to some very intimate sessions of, like, you know,
aww, you
rehearsal.
Used to come with me to my voice lessons.
Yes, I did. And I got to witness that. And I've heard you perform some opera stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's magical to me. It's weird because as a human being, I never was like, fuck, I love opera. You know, like, it's not something that I just like gravitated towards. But when I heard you sing it, it was like, wow. I've never heard a person do that, like, for real.
Well,
and
shucks.
I'm not trying to like, you know,
suck my proverbial D.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. But I'm, you know, just to be genuine, I was shocked at how amazing you sounded. And it was really bizarre, because it was like a different part of you. And that person isn't gone, but she morphed in a beautiful way, because your opera, like, you focus on all this training and all this work and effort to be
years
great.
Of work.
I mean, you took 15 years of lessons? Is that a right number?
Well, I started taking voice lessons when I was little. I took a few with one of the teachers in my town, but I didn't really like doing it and whatever. And then in 2001, I met my voice teacher, Jack Windsor Hansen of Hammond, Indiana. He recently passed away this year, which was really hard and sad. And that's actually a really interesting coincidence. Sarah knew Jack as well. She took lessons with him. And I think she stopped taking lessons right before I started taking lessons with him. So we just missed each other in 2001.
That, you know, and that's, we could spend a lot of time on that discussion too, of how I feel like your friendship and everything that we've all shared has been like destined.
I completely agree.
You and
Sarah and I should have met probably like 15 years ago.
In so many
different
situations.
And we would have been friends, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah,
we went to the exact same show at the Metro, Cursive, you know?
Wait, not a comment. It's not like everybody's gearing up to go to Cursive, I'm sure.
Well, I was, but yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, we both have I have a Cursive tattoo. That's how much I loved Cursive at the time. And I still do. I love Cursive. But yeah, we were at the same show, didn't meet. We had the same music instructor and didn't meet. And we hung around the same areas. We liked the same shitty music, and it wasn't meant to be until it was meant to be.
That's perfectly said.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's like the beginning of the story again, is how odd, you know, October 18th of, is that 2014? Holy hell. That day, poof, everything expands on a whole different level.
Yeah, meeting you definitely changed my life.
I mean, I don't think I could say it any better.
In the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're gearing up, you were talking about taking lessons with Jack.
Yeah.
And that was a very cool experience to sit in on a couple of your lessons.
I'm so glad that you got to come with me to that and meet him before he passed away, because he was like a grandfather to me and was so special. And I took lessons with him religiously for years. And he was really important to me. You know, so I'm really glad that you got to meet him and be there and
got to make a kind of really a hilarious memory with him.
Oh my God, this is probably one of my favorite memories of Jack. We took him to we were driving him to my last recital with him.
Correct.
And I hadn't done a recital in a long time because I was a stay-at-home mom and I had kind of given opera up in 2013, I think that was the last thing I did operatically was down in Indianapolis. And I was just kind of done with it, and I wanted to do one last recital with him, and I knew it was going to be my last one with him because he was very old, and I just knew what was coming, so I decided to do it and put myself out there one more time. And so we're driving to this recital, and Nate's driving, Mr. Hansen's in the front, and Sarah and I are in the back. And you should probably tell the rest, because what I witnessed... Just go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to make one tiny correction to the story, because this is actually after the recital. We had done the recital. This is
on, it was
on
the way home.
On the way to drop Jack off.
Okay.
We're driving. It's getting dark around. I look over. I'm driving. I look over. And all of a sudden, I see a spider drop down off the ceiling, like right in front of my face.
Right.
And I can't panic because I'm behind the wheel of a vehicle and I have an old man in the front seat with me who's fragile. And I don't know what to do, but I'm like, if I can just get it on the floor, he'll go away. If I can just put it...
out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. Out of sight, out of mind. This fucking spider can just live on the floor and he'll be great. So I do the thing that I have learned to kind of do, and I go up above the spider and I grab its web and I fucking threw it on Jack. I didn't mean to throw it on Jack. That wasn't my intent.
Did you panic?
I did, because the fucking spider started moving at me. And oh, I was God. Like, this spider is angry and he's mad.
So
and
you
I
panicked
have to...
and you threw a spider on Jack.
Well, it might have landed on Jack. It could have landed on the floor. I know I aimed at the floor, but it's a floating spider. He could have went anywhere.
Oh, my God.
But I didn't say anything.
Right.
I'm just driving like this, like mouth closed.
Trying not to die.
The whole time. We drop Jack off. Have a lovely night, Jack. You know, it was an awesome recital. You did great. Yeah. There were some other students Jack had that were there as well, and that was awesome to experience. And it's really cool to have brushed shoulders with him in my life because, you know, he was a pupil of one of Debussy's pupils.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing that classical music
Jack
has
was
got
amazing.
So close to me.
He was amazing.
He wrote a
was
book.
So talented. He wrote a book, Requiem for a Diva. It's the Sybil Sanderson story. It's a story about a famous opera singer. And he spent years and years and years of his life researching this woman and meeting with her family and going through her things. And he was related to her through marriage. Oh. So, like, he was just such a dedicated artist and poet and, you know, pianist. He was a concert pianist for years, a famous one in the 50s and 60s. Yeah, so, yeah, that was a funny memory.
Well,
the spider.
We drop him off to kind of tell the story around, because I'll never forget this. We drop him off, and then there's silence. I back out of the alley. Mm-hmm. We get to, like, the T, and I guess in my mind I didn't want to say anything till I, like, knew for a fact he couldn't hear me, which he already probably couldn't.
Well, yeah,
you know?
Since he was down the street.
So I'm like, guys, I have to tell you something. I panicked, and I threw a spider on Jack. And you fell out. I don't think I heard you. I don't think I've heard you laugh that hard, probably ever. It was a pretty hilarious moment, really.
It was really funny. That was a great moment.
So, you know, that is a great story. You said something along the line that I want to jump into. As detailed as you'd like, because I don't know what the process or anything is like. I don't think we've really super discussed it, but. You tried out for the lyric, right? Or was it something like that, right?
I auditioned for the lyric opera twice. And it wasn't a very good experience for me. I was very nervous. And I was not confident in myself because I never went to a conservatory. I didn't do all of the traditional steps that you need to do in order to become an opera singer.
There's like a hierarchy.
And opera is a very, very limited world run by old white dudes. And as far, I mean that just based on my own personal experiences.
Well, if you want to get into it, I would love to hear what the experience was like.
Well, my favorite old white dude, Jack, convinced me that I was ready and talented enough and capable to audition for the chorus at the Lyric. And there was this thing, it was called the Ryan Program, and it was like a young artist thing where they train you to become members of the chorus. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you can become invited to be a principal, you know, a principal singer. And so that's the steps that you have to do. And in order to get into the Ryan Program, like, you have to have already been a professional fucking singer your entire life, essentially, in my opinion. And I just was really going in with a lot of self-doubt because I didn't go to a conservatory. I didn't go to music school. I went to Purdue and for history, and I didn't get to finish my degree because it was just too much money. And it wasn't in the cards, you know, at the time. So I don't think I did bad at either of my auditions. Obviously, it wasn't what they were looking for, as it, you know, didn't work out. But I didn't noticeably fuck up or anything. But I just wasn't feeling good about it, and I kept thinking about what Jack wanted my life to look like, and if I wanted my life to look like that, and I didn't. So I stopped doing it, and I just did recitals, and then an opportunity came along through one of his other students that was in this intimate opera of Indianapolis company. And we went down, me and Jack and my ex-husband at this point, we drove down to Indianapolis and went and saw a production that they did. And it was so cool and really fun and sweet. And I loved it. And Jack loved it. Even though I did see him fall asleep a little bit because he was, you know, older and tired. But, yeah, so I met with the people that ran that, and they gave me the information for an audition for their upcoming season, and I ended up getting a gig through them that ran for 2 weeks in Indy, and it was really fun. And it was just selections from different operas. It was called Love is a Battlefield, and it was all these different love songs from different Broadway shows and operas and stuff. And it was really cool. Like, what they're doing down there is really interesting, trying to bring opera to people that normally wouldn't be interested in seeing it, and making it fun and for everybody.
Accessible opera.
Yeah, making it accessible. That's what they do. So check them out online, by the way. Intimate Opera of Indy.
So you did opera until something happened in your life.
Yeah, the intimate, or the, it was at the Indie Fringe Theater. That was my last performance operatically, because then I found out that I was going to have a baby.
Yeah, and I would be completely foolish to not mention how much Oliver Halso has changed my life.
Because,
you know, I've been around him since he was Oliver. Just a little under a year old, and it's completely bizarre to me how cool and smart your kid is.
Aww.
He's definitely a reflection of his mom.
Well, thanks.
So,
yeah, he's my little sweetheart. Oh my God, I love that kid to death. He's amazing. And so, yeah, I wanted to have a baby very badly. I always wanted to have kids and to be a mom. That was a big priority for what I wanted my life to be. And so I found out I was expecting, and I went to a few more voice lessons, you know, here and there throughout my pregnancy. And then once Oliver came, everything changed, and my priorities shifted to being a stay-at-home mom, you know, and that's all I was doing, you know, was being at home with him, taking care of my baby. And I am so grateful that I had the opportunity to do that and have that time with him, because it was really special. And it was really hard because my ex-husband had a job where he was gone all the time, and I was by myself with my baby all the time. And I mean, I wasn't by myself all the time. My family lives in my town, and I have a huge family, and everybody was so great and came over and hung out with me and took care of Ollie if I needed to take a shower or a break or whatever. But yeah, it just got really hard, and I kind of got really sucked into being a mom. And I don't regret it for a minute, you know, obviously, but I did go back for a few voice lessons here and there after Ollie was born. It just was too difficult to maintain it as much as I was doing it. So I just kind of let it go.
It was it was not probably until you met me that the shift would happen kind of again, because you had kind of lost the drive to perform and stuff. And little do we know that, again, to the very beginning of the podcast, this meeting, this one day, mm-hmm. sets everything in motion, and we're going to now kind of get into the band that we share together. And okay. it's only been a little over a year of performing. Mm-hmm. We've been hard at work honing this thing for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, from my perspective of the day that we met, this is something that I will just hold on to it forever. Because we were standing in line at Bombers, you were going to order some to-go food, because I think we all ate together, and then you were
ordering. I didn't eat with you. You guys ate before me, which I was kind of bummed about.
Well, we didn't know you, and Brandon is kind of like that, too. He's hungry. Get out of his way.
Yeah, I know that about Brandon. I know. But, you can't fuck with Brando and Bombers.
Correct. So
But I was running late that day because my dog had pissed all over my kid's car seat, and I had to clean that up.
And I remember that, too, because that was, like, one of the first things you said, like, I'm going to have to get rid of my dog.
Yeah.
On my kid's car seat. Of course, didn't end up getting rid of Benny.
I didn't end up getting rid of Benny. But my ex really wanted to get rid of that dog.
But I was standing with you in line at Bombers because you were going to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're ordering food. We were talking a little bit, and you're like, yeah, I might try out for this band. I got a couple friends who are doing this band thing, whatever. And I just went, why don't you just come hang out with us? And it was like, I was trying to make this friendship happen, because I just kind of, I don't know, I felt it. It's weird. I felt it. Like, that's all I can say. So the universe says, like, fucking tell her to just hang out with you guys. And so I said it. And I don't know if you knew how serious I was, but, like, I was very persistent. Very persistent, and I finally, in December, got you out of your house, and you came where we're
like
recording.
Like I said, I was in mom mode. Correct. I wasn't looking to make new friends at the time, and I was, because I know how demanding being a stay-at-home mom is, and I didn't have time for people. I lost almost every single one of my friends that I had before I had my son. It is gone to the wind. You know, once that's like the dirty little secret of adulthood that nobody tells you about when you have a kid. All your friends will kind of just fade away and the important ones stay, you know.
So doesn't that mean then that the important ones are actually your friends mm-hmm. and everybody else was just, you know, collateral damage, as it were?
I guess. I mean,
it's an unfortunate way to look at things.
It's a bleak way to look at it, but I just felt like motherhood was very, very lonely, which is why I ended up, you know, deciding, hey, maybe I guess I will just come and hang out with them. My other friend that were our mutual friend was coming over, and I was like, all right, I'll just go and make friends. Yeah. So I did.
And it was great. Brando was here, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kate, Silent Rob was here, Gretchen.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was kind of like a big ordeal.
And that was the first time I met Sarah.
And it was the first time you met Sarah. And of course, you guys immediately like hit it off with this friendship. You had so many things in common.
She was so crabby. She was eating fried chicken from KFC, but she was like super sick. So she was being super crabby.
Yeah.
And I was like, this girl's hilarious.
Yeah. She gets, look, that's two things. She has bad luck with food.
I know, she does.
And okay, like, Sarah is the person, you could cook 300 chicken McNuggets from McDonald's, serve them all to her.
And she'll eat the one with the gristle in it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
The first one.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the time.
I know.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah, so that was the first time I met her, was at that little shindig you had.
Yeah, and then from there, it was just like, it kind of became a thing where we were wanting to kind of see each other a lot more, hang out more, do whatever we could do, watch stuff, be nerdy, because that's another thing you and I have in common. We have a lot of different nerddoms that we share.
Correct, which is why we have a podcast.
Correct, Foodies Watching Movies. The thing to me that I felt that is funny to mention is how early JIC was when I met you and where it is now. And you're like, it's hard to think of Journey into Comics and not immediately associate that you were a part of all of it, just because of, like, I met you 6 months after the second episode, to put it into time frame perspective.
Right.
So, and we weren't even, I mean, that October was the first time we decided, like, we'll do 4 shows this month, one for every week. Let's see if we can do it. And we did.
Yeah.
And then now we do it every week. And now we have a network and do too many shows like this one. I don't even care. But, you know, the budding friendship was great. And then it was crazy because you and Sarah actually made this really cool decision to start performing music together.
Yeah, we figured we're both classically trained musicians and we need money, so what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
So we formed this little duo, Diamond and Fang, and we played a couple of places, a couple of parties. Two Halloween parties. That was really fun. And we just did piano vocal covers of different Halloween-y sounding songs.
You guys had a really amazing playlist. You guys put,
we did. We made a great playlist, which we should probably post on like your Voice of Survival Instagram so everybody could see.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
Because it was pretty good.
We had
Bowie on there and we had CCR.
It's funny to think about like Diamond and Fang, and that time in our life is like a blip on the radar.
Yeah, came and gone, came and went quickly.
But to think about that time, it's like we're grooming ourselves for the inevitable, because I'm loading all the gear into the truck.
Yeah.
Taking you guys to the gig.
Being the roadie.
It's helping set up, running sound.
You were like our manager.
I did a little bit of managing and kind of dipped my pinky toes back into interacting with people and sounding quasi-professional in a rambling email where I'm not sure if I'm talking like a coherent human or not. But
well, that's one of the things that I like about you, Nate, is you're a doer. You make things happen. I like that. It's nice.
I've found the unfortunate truth in life is if you sit on your ass and wait for the thing to happen, probably won't.
Right.
And
you gotta put in the work and the effort and
And I think that a lot of people do. I think just to kind of riff for a second, I think that people struggle with seeing a big picture and then being able to focus on the map in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two very different things. You have to be aware that looking at the big picture sometimes might get dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it might feel like it's light years away from you, but as long as you're focused on the map that you know is in front of you, that you're laying for yourself and you believe in your steps, failures and successes or otherwise, as long as you believe in yourself, you're just going to keep driving forward. And that's kind of a philosophy that has just been instilled in me from, you know, growing up with my dad and just kind of the situations we were put into.
Right.
And it was really weird because I met you and we have so many parallels. You know, there are a lot of similarities to our lives and our journeys and whatnot.
We do.
And it's really funny because we both are musicians who started playing the exact same instrument, almost like the exact same instrument, because you played a warlock guitar, right?
Yeah, I did.
And I had a warlock bass.
Yeah.
And you actually, your first band gig when you were like 14, what was that?
15? Oh, my shitty punk band?
Yeah. Oh, no, I was... bass.
When I played bass?
Yeah. Right?
I played guitar. I played guitar in the shitty punk band.
Oh, I thought for some reason
I had
bass.
To teach my friend to play the bass line for the two songs that we played at the skate park when I was like 16.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll give you the picture. You can put it up. It's pretty funny.
Yes, please do. That's amazing. I didn't know there was photographic evidence of
your
gig.
There is. There's even video, but I'm not giving you that.
And it's funny to mention video. I just found some Draxus tapes that are
you
at
did,
your house right
and
now.
You showed it to me, and it was adorable.
It was really weird.
Shout
to
out
like,
to Baby Brando.
Yeah, Baby Brando.
Baby Nate.
Baby Nate. The old skating rink show. Wow, that was.
That was really funny to watch.
That was 12 years ago. Feels like a lifetime and change ago. But want to get back to the music. You did this shitty little punk band.
I did. I did a shitty little punk band. We had like two shows at the local skate park in my town. I used to like to skateboard. I wasn't very good, but I did it anyway.
Did you ever hurt yourself?
No, I didn't.
Awesome. Good job.
I never hurt myself. The only cool thing I could do was go down the half pipe, and that was it.
I couldn't do that. I sucked at skateboarding.
I could never figure out how to do like an ollie or anything like that.
You mean you call me Calamity Nate for a reason? Me That's on a skateboard
true.
Is damage incorporated.
That
you know?
Is that is terrible idea. Yeah, but we played the Pixies. We played Gigantic. That's what we played. Mm-hmm. We played Gigantic, and we played a Metric song, but I can't remember the name of it.
How was that experience for you?
At that show, though, I wasn't playing my Warlock. I was playing my hot pink Fender Strat that my dad had given me. That was his from like 86 or 87 or something like that.
Wow.
I can't remember. Yeah. It was his hot pink Fender from the 80s.
What was that experience like? Playing okay.
That was my first taste of playing in a punk band, and I fucking loved it. It was so fun. And I loved all the grungy, scurvy-looking kids just jamming.
Did you have a pretty okay crowd?
Yeah.
Did you guys sound okay?
Yeah. Probably not. I don't know.
You threw it together, you said, pretty quick.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was like 3 days before the thing. I learned how to play the guitar on that song.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Like, for real. It's
and then
interesting,
the person
too.
Who was going to drum couldn't do it, so we had our buddy Jerry do it, and he actually did good. Oh, yeah, we played that song Maps by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, because we had a guitar, drums, and keyboard at that show.
Oh, interesting. Keyboard mm-hmm. making a early fixture in your musical journey.
Wow, I wouldn't have even
and punk
thought about
and
it.
And piano.
But yeah, my friend Haley was in my band with me and our other friend Crystal, and she was playing the keyboard, and we were doing shitty, you know, shitty covers. But it was great. I loved it, and it was so fun. And that kind of planted like the seed of wanting to keep doing that.
Yeah.
It was just, that one wasn't meant to be. There was so many band opportunities that came up when I was in high school, like, oh yeah, we need a keyboard player for this band. You want to do it? And I'd be like, okay. And I'd come and we'd have like one practice and they'd be like, I don't know. Like they'd get all intimidated or something and like scared of me because I was a girl and they're whoever. And other ones would be like the guitar players would be just way too ego driven. It's like, no, it's kind of, we just want like background noise, you know? And I'm just like, okay, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. That seems to be a very interesting theme with, ego-driven guitar players. I know, because at one point in my life, I was a little bit of an ego-driven guitar player.
I was never an ego-driven guitar player because I only played rhythm guitar. I never liked playing lead guitar.
I'm not talking about even being a lead guitar player. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I was a guitar player, but I was also a lead singer. So mm-hmm. the ego was kind of just like second nature.
Right.
But of course, that all changes. So I will never, ever, and I think that's another theme I'm going to say I'll never forget. And this is record that, damn it, Nate, you will never forget because I'm saying it here on the podcast.
Okay.
You know, so I'm sitting here one day and Sarah comes to me and she says, hey, I want you to play drums. And I just kind of giggled. I was like, we don't even have drums. Like, what are you talking about? Play the drums. What the fuck? Like, come on now. I play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, be real. And she's like, listen, here's my idea. And she's like, and this is like the bare bones, the first sketch of the idea. She mm-hmm. goes, you on drums, me on piano, maybe I can get Rob to do bass, we'll do Misfit songs, it'll be radical. And I was like, yeah, I like that idea, who's gonna sing? And I was like, because I can do it. I have to learn how to drum, but right. I can probably sing and play drums. I can sing and play guitar, can't be that much different. It is, but you know, so I was like, what about V? Like, why don't you guys have Diamond and Fang already going?
Mm-hmm.
Why not her?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, I'll ask her. I just don't think she'll do it. She sings opera. Why would she do shitty punk songs? And I was like, we should try. I think that's a smart play. And boom, that's the spark. The sketch that we came up with that day is the band.
Yeah.
I mean, when it started, of course, you were learning Graves era Misfits, which is a whole different thing than what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And that's coming out of your shell from being an opera singer.
Yeah, that was really fun for me. That was really difficult for me. I don't know if you know this about me, but I have terrible stage fright. Like, I have a horrible, horrible phobia of performing on stage, which is interesting as I'm a lead singer and have been a musician my entire life. But that's why I do it, because the more I do it, the less scary it is. Like, now, thinking about going and doing a show, no problem. I can do it. It's fine. But
if we would have tried to start gigging back in those days...
Oh, fuck no. No, no, no. I wasn't ready. And I still don't feel like I've gotten to my peak. I feel like I'm still growing and evolving and figuring out what my true voice is, as my mom would call it. And just figuring out what kind of music I want to make and how I like to sing. And I don't like conforming to any one genre because I like so many different things, and I'm physically capable of performing in a ton of different genres that I like. So why not do that, you know?
I think that it was really interesting, and I want to know from kind of your perspective this, because I know from our side, it was like, we're going to ask V to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we present this to you, what even went through your head? Because the concept is strange, and it's like I said, you and Sarah had been performing as Diamond and Fang. It had almost been like a calendar year of working of mm-hmm. Diamond and Fang, leading up to this what we're gonna call the major shift.
Well, I think Sarah and I got really tired really fast of the Diamond and Fang thing because it was not what we wanted to be doing. It was marketing ourselves to play wedding receptions or country clubs or jazz at restaurants when, yes, we are capable of doing those things. And sure, maybe it could make us money if we really commit to doing it and put our all into it and market it. But we didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't like how it made me feel when I was doing it because it wasn't good. You know, it was, I didn't have any passion for it. I didn't give a fuck about it. So when you guys were talking to me about this band idea, I thought this is definitely something I could get behind, because it was, I feel like the past 10 years of my life, I've been a completely different person that I thought I was going to be. And the person that I was 10 years ago was this person that would totally be in a punk band and have fun and, you know, try to make that life work. And when you guys talked to me about this band, I wasn't that person. I had been a mom for a couple years, and I had been married and had a home and have had jobs and stuff like that. You know, I wasn't in that place. But when we got tired of the Diamond and Fang thing, I really felt like I was ready to get back to myself and back to my roots and who I wanted to be. So I just decided to do it. And I've always loved punk music, and I love horror punk, and it was like a little omen. I was digging around in my car, and I found my old Misfits lighter from high school when I bought it at like Hot Topic or something, and I was like, oh, it's a sign.
Did you still have it in your car?
It's still in my car. It doesn't work. It hadn't worked in a long
Symbolic.
Time. Symbolic. I keep it in there, yeah.
It's symbolism.
Yeah, it's just funny coincidences like that keep propelling me to do what we're doing.
So I want to talk about a funny story that happened at one of the band practices.
Okay.
Before we introduced the other element of you being in the band. Because it's interesting. I don't think a lot of people know this, because we spent a whole year honing the sound of Walk Among Us. And in doing that, we went from you just singing to now you sing and do the dirty piano thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's you singing has evolved so much from all the way at the beginning, which I have old, like the day one practice tapes. I still
you do?
Have them. Oh, yeah, I still have them.
That's adorable. We should watch it.
Yeah, I think that's when I wanted to call us Die Monster Die. Luckily, I didn't. There's already a band called Die Monster Die. but I do have the first practice taped, and, you know, it's rough because we're figuring it out. But
how
I will
funny.
Never, I will never forget. It was like we were probably 2 months into practicing. We were setting up for rehearsal one day. It had snowed. And Sarah walked into the bedroom. Do you remember this?
No. I don't.
And she screamed.
Oh, the snake?
There was there was a baby snake in the bedroom.
under her like pillow in her bedroom.
That sounded funnier than it was. There was a baby snake in the bedroom. Okay. Maybe, yeah, okay.
No, there was a snake in there.
So I had to wrangle the snake and throw it in the snow, which I felt bad for because I probably killed that snake, but...
Well,
so
circle of life,
we,
man.
We got to fast forward the kind of the boring time of like gearing up to...
I do think it's pertinent to say that we initially weren't thinking that Walk Among Us was going to be like what it's become. Like, Sarah had the idea to do a Halloween show.
Correct.
It was like August. We started talking about it. Let's just do a Halloween show. It's all Misfits covers. And then it just evolved into, this is fucking rad. We have to do this all the time.
Yeah.
And then it just evolved into this whole Danzig thing, to where we just do Danzig sets, and we're starting to pepper and sprinkle in actual Danzig songs in our Misfits sets. And I love it. I think it's precious and hilarious and so fucking cool.
It's different than anything else going on.
Yeah, it's so much fun. It makes me so happy to get up on stage with my best friends and scream about dumb shit. And people like it. Because we still have the pianos. It's still kind of classy, but mostly trashy and whatever.
That's a good tag.
Yeah.
Kind of classy, mostly trashy.
Yeah, trash piano.
So I want to speed forward a little bit into, we were at probably July of 2016, and the itch to start playing kind of hits us. And we're like, we should try to like get a show together, you know, and we're all like, please, we need to play music now, you know, like it has to
happen. Yeah, we were ready. We were ready to put ourselves out there.
And you were like, I think I needed to play an instrument. And we were like, what? And you were like, I don't feel confident being on stage yet. I'm not sure. I need something in front of me. A ukulele, anything.
I needed to hide behind my piano a little bit.
You just needed to find yourself on stage again.
Right. And I really wanted to have another element to our sound that we were making, because to me, it was sounding empty. It wasn't sounding as full as we wanted it to.
And I don't remember who...
Because we don't have any guitars in our band.
That's very important to say. He right. Correct. Fuck just, guitars.
Well, but not really. Fuck guitars, but yeah. For what we were doing, we wanted it to be just pianos, bass, and drums.
Yep. Yeah. But I want to, you know, I can't remember who exactly says it, but someone goes, what about V on another piano? Let's set up the P80.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was you or Sarah or somebody. Somebody said it. It doesn't matter. We set it up immediately. But to take it one further, Rob was like, this is a cool idea. Next week, I'll bring some of my pedals.
Right.
And here is something that I think is very important to the story is the last week of July of 2016, you send me this thing like, hey, this place is looking for bands to open for the Ataris. We should try to do this. Holy shit, that's amazing. And I was like, you know, I actually fucking dig the Ataris. Like they did that Boys of Summer cover, and that's the only song of theirs I know. So it's not even their song. And, like, I'm being totally honest, but I absolutely love that cut.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
that was
yes.
a band from my youth.
Yeah, the Ataris. So I was like, sure. I'll try to get us a show with the Ataris.
Mm-hmm.
And I put ourselves out there. I did. I sold us with no demo, with no nothing. No one had any proof of what we were going to sound like.
Right. And this was our first show.
And I'm like, look, it's two pianos, bass, drums, vocals galore. It's different, I promise. Not like what you're expecting. And they were like, sure. Here's the deal, though. You got to sell a bunch of tickets. I think we had to sell 30 tickets.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember.
Fuck y'all. We sold 40 because we're the best. Because that's how we roll.
40 whole tickets.
Hey, first show, 40 tickets. That's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, there was a good amount of people at our first show.
And I kind of felt a little less than that night because everyone else had family that was there but me.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I'm not saying that in any bad way, you know.
Well, your family lives far away.
They do live far away. So it was my first experience performing not in front of someone I knew.
Right.
And I'm in a room of pretty much strangers and drums, and it's mm-hmm. all a whole new experience. And like,
yeah, I don't think you get enough credit for all the shit that you do, Nate.
You know, the lights go on and it's like, oh shit, we're starting. And we start the Kong at the Gates thing. And by the time we hit Forbidden Zone, I think I was adrenaline shot, just rah, you know, like jacked to the max, you know?
Right.
We power through the set, and I want to kind of go back and ask, like, how was that experience for you? Your first actual taste performing in a punk band again, like, so kind of back to your roots,
mm-hmm.
in a whole new environment, mm-hmm. after years of operatic training.
Yeah.
And you close the set with what I started to kind of quickly realize was the bread and butter of what we could do, which was the Danzig stuff.
Yeah.
And you hadn't honed the Tiny Danzig yet, but you were gearing up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know that first show back, like, where was your head at, you know?
Well, I was really nervous because I had a lot of friends and some of my family came. And I just didn't want to embarrass myself because my aunt was there, my mom was there, my other aunt was there, two of my younger cousins were there. I mean, it was 21 and older, but... and then a bunch of my friends came, and some of my mom's friends came, and my stepdad came. And I just was like, am I going to be able to sing these horrible lyrics in front of my mother and my aunts and my stepdad?
I'm so glad that you brought up the lyrics.
But I did it.
Oh. Oh, no, you keep going. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah, I that was a really surreal experience for me. Not only because I have stage fright, but I feel like as a professional musician, I'm able to tap into the place that I need to when I'm about to do something important so I can get it done. And I felt like I was able to get it done. And I felt a ton of adrenaline afterwards. I felt really happy. I was super pissed that the sound was as shitty as it was, because the everybody kept saying, I wish I just could have heard you. I wish I could have heard you. The drums and everything was so loud. I wish we could have heard you. But that's something that we deal with a lot with our band, because we don't have guitars. People don't really understand how to mix us with our pianos, and it just takes a little extra effort on our part to get the sound right before the shows. And that's what comes with experience and doing as many shows as we've done now. You know, we know how to get that sounding right, so that kind of thing doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's been an interesting thing in the journey as well, is learning how to tell people, this is how we need to fucking sound.
Like, right, and a lot of times the sound guys that are there aren't the usual sound guys for the venue. It's always, oh, well, the sound guy couldn't make it, our buddy's stepping in, and they don't know what they're doing, and they feel terrible because they know they're sounding, making us sound like shit, and that's happened a couple of times. But, you know, this is punk rock. You just fucking do it and have fun, and it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, one show to the next, people are only going to remember, like, the thing that's memorable, and as long as you're having fun and they can connect with that, I think.
Right, and every show we've played has been pretty fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's always a blast.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the first show. It has a really funny story that's like underlaying about your mom. And you said the lyrics. So
oh yeah,
let's
she's
talk
notorious
about
for getting lyrics wrong her entire life.
So you know, it's funny because I think you prefaced, you're like, Nate, you'll never believe what my mom did. And I was like, okay. And I had known your mom pretty much the amount of time that I had known you. We were introduced to her relatively early in our friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, first of all, before I tell this story, my mom one time, or pretty much her whole life, I think is how you said it, sings Dirty Deeds by AC/DC wrong. She always thinks it says Dirty Deeds and the Thunder Chief, not Dirty Deeds and They're Done Dirt Cheap.
Well, she knows now, but...
But you get what I'm saying, yeah. Right? So you kind of like prefaced this funny thing. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let you take over, because what she did at our first show, legendarily hilarious. And I cannot... I wish I was one of the people she approached. That's how great it is. I wish I could have been not me long enough for her to approach me and say what she said to people and go, what the fuck is that lady on? You know, because she's so, your mom is just like this, you know, nice, super happy person, you know.
She's my fairy princess mom.
She's vibrant and bubbly and whatnot. And so thinking about her,
and she's
walking
weird
up,
she's super weird.
Yes.
And she's got some dark shit brewing around that comes out in the funniest, most interesting of ways.
Sometimes
but
inopportune
she,
time.
Well, that's neither here nor there. But she's typically very funny and very happy and sweet. So she was walking up to people at the first show, and we had sung the song Skulls. And she thought I was saying, I want your soul, not I want your skull. And so she kept going up to random people at this bar saying, I want your soul. I want your soul, man. And she's like, that's why people were looking at me weird. And I was like, yeah, it's not soul. It's skull.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, that happens to
her. It's just funny because, like I said, I wish I was one of the people that she approached and said that to. Because
yeah,
I'm
sure you could have told this story funnier, but whatever.
No, you did fine. It was great. I don't have the firsthand account of it. I think I would be remiss. We kind of tapped on it a little bit earlier, but before we move forward in our band journey, because we're going to start talking about the traveling that we start to do and the heavier load that we picked up in 2017. But I want to go to May of 2016.
Okay.
And you and I and Sarah, actually, you and I, and then you and I and Sarah made some really dope memories in the month of May of 2016. May 10th of 2016, you and I recorded Foodies Episode 0.
That's right, we did.
And that was your first journey into podcasting, officially, mm-hmm. like your first full time on the radio doing a thing. And
I had guested before on your podcasts and stuff.
Yeah, but in a more featured role where you were, a prominent factor of it,
mm-hmm.
Carrying the show, as it were.
Well, let's just say co-host.
Okay, fair enough. So I want to talk about the month of May because we were talking about doing, like, we wanted to do the riff track on Twister, right? Mm-hmm. Because Twister is one of our favorite movies.
Yeah, another interesting coincidence between Nathaniel and I.
Of all the movies in the
world. Of all the movies in the whole world, we love Twister.
And we can quote it to each other.
We could probably dedicate an entire podcast to talking about Twister, which we did.
Foodies Episode Zero. Go
That's
back
right.
and listen.
We did.
So if you like Twister, we definitely nerded out on
it's
that
It's super
movie.
Dorky and precious. But
it's the early birth of Foodies. Mm-hmm. It's kind of foodies watching movies where, yes, we ate food and we are foodies, but we were just watching movies and talking about the movies and not doing a lot of food stuff.
Right. It was more just about the movies, and then we're just saying, oh, yeah, we're having pizza right now.
So we released that Foodies Watching Movies Episode Zero, and then a few short weeks later, we went on a pretty epic quest.
Mm-hmm.
When we drove 9 hours to Mississippi, and then after the Mississippi part of the trip, which was awesome, a lot of great food.
Oh my God, the food, which can all be seen on our Foodies Watching Movies Instagram.
It's pretty much the birth of our Foodies Watching Movies
Instagram.
We did.
We made the Foodies Watching Movies Instagram while we were in Mississippi because we were eating this amazing fucking pork.
The rib cage.
At the rib cage, yeah. And where were we? Oxford?
We were in Oxford,
Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Yeah, shout out to that place. That was radical. And We're talking about how great this pulled pork and cheese sandwich I had, and your ribs were really good. And we're like, we need to just take pictures of these because these are incredible so we can remember them. And then we're like, why don't we just make an Instagram for our podcast?
Yeah, we did that.
So
the next morning,
to the bagel place.
We drove into town and went to the bagel place, and mm-hmm. I had the poppy seed muffin, and we sat outside. And
yeah, it was super nice in a little cafe style.
Oxford,
Mississippi was
beautiful.
Fantastic.
Absolutely
I would love
beautiful.
To go back there.
So we know we're there day two. We also ate at that like New Orleans joint that they had. That was like,
oh
the
yeah,
New Orleans food.
You had the catfish po' boy or something, right?
Yeah, the second line or something, I think is what it was called. The catfish po' boy was what I had. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You had a burger of some sort.
You know what? I don't remember what I had.
There are pictures on our Instagram. I'm sure we could look them up at some point,
okay.
But, so the day three of this trip is the day we're going to be heading back home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, oh, God, this fun vacation that we've done that, you know, had some other stuff happen that we don't really need to get into today. But
it was an intense, difficult trip.
A lot of factors.
It was an emotional trip.
Very much so.
Yeah, and then we were driving home from Mississippi, and I was like, we've got to go to Memphis.
And it's funny because as you're saying we got to go to Memphis, I think you put it in maybe the Walk Among Us Facebook or something. Like, Rob, we're going to Memphis.
Yeah.
He said
we need to go eat at Jerry the King Lawler's new restaurant on Beale Street. And we're like, fuck yeah, we do.
So we did.
Yeah, so we did. And you guys have never been to Memphis, right?
I had never been to Memphis. My only times in Tennessee have always been Nashville.
See, I've never been to Nashville, and I've always wanted to go to Nashville, but I've been to Memphis several times. I love Memphis. I went a couple of times with some girlfriends and stuff like that and with family. And the music there is incredible. The food is incredible. I love going to Graceland, even though you spend like $55 just to see this tacky, horrible house. But it's worth every penny. I love it. And so we went to Beale Street, and we went to Jerry the King Lawler's new restaurant that he had there, and we got to see him there. He was actually in the back, and I was like, Nate, you need to go back there and take a picture and get a soundbite for your Journey into Wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
So see, we did.
It's all the early startings of the shows and all this behind-the-scenes stuff where you're such an integral part of my journey, and that's what I'm saying is like... interconnected for life, I feel. Like there's no chance of like you not being a part of this journey now.
Aww.
So we are in Memphis, but we're not in Memphis just to eat at Jerry the King Lawler's fucking delicious
no,
joint.
No, I said that we had to go to Sun Studios.
I want to talk about that.
That was really intense.
That was
I hadn't been there in a few years. I've been there several times. It's one of my favorite places to go in Memphis. If you're a musician, if you are into history or music history, Sun Studios is the coolest place in Memphis.
I don't believe in God. I just want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an atheist in that regard. But Sun Studios made me a believer of something.
Yeah, we had kind of a religious experience at Sun Studios. Being there, I felt the energy just as I had the last time I had been there. I knew what you guys were about to experience, and I was so fucking stoked for you and excited.
But I think,
because I knew that you two were going to really appreciate it.
Well, and I think that our tour guide was in like a very important part of that puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there are some people that could just do that tour and just be very monotone. And
Every time I've been there, the tour guide has been next level, because they're always musicians themselves. They love it. They worship this fucking place. So they make every tour they do excellent.
Well, shout out to Nick, who did our tour. And it was weird because you're upstairs for a long time and there's this like anticipation, because really the bread and butter of the tour is to be in the studio.
Right.
Where these songs were recorded, where these men made music history.
Right.
You know, and there's this, you just anticipation building, and you, me and Sarah just standing there still. And I think we had some bags of gifts or goodies we had got from the gift shop downstairs. And, I will never forget this. Okay, we're going downstairs, and I just so happen to be the first person that walks into Sun Studios
mm-hmm.
on this tour. And for like a blip of a moment, I'm in there alone.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling it. And then it's starting to kind of build. And it's building, and then they're telling these stories about things, and there's an X, and that's like where Elvis sang, and there's this piano that Jerry Lee Lewis performed on, and I don't know if he recorded anything that was important on it, but he
definitely put his cigar out on the
put
keys.
His cigar out on the keys, which is so Jerry Lee Lewis, and like Carl Perkins had been in there, and Roy Orbison, and you're just like, it's overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
and it was totally insane to experience that with you, because I think that's like the extra spark the three of us needed going into actually performing.
Yeah.
As a band.
We felt really good after we left Sun Studios and we were driving back the hours and hours back home. It was a good drive, and I just felt like we were floating on a cloud from that Memphis trip.
We made a bonus stop.
Oh, yeah. We stopped at Lambert's Cafe in Missouri and had
Throat Rolls.
That place is delicious. Second time I've been there.
So good.
So good.
Next
they
level.
Walk around with big giant bowls filled with like deep fried okra and all these little sides, and they just pass them out to you. You just raise your hand and they bring you more shit.
Yeah, that was.
And they throw rolls across the room. It's kind of their thing. It was really good. You just had to wait a really long time because it was so busy.
That trip is definitely my fondest like vacation trip. Aww. I've been to Disney World. I've been to Canada in the wilderness and fucking looked at a live moose in a lake and watched a water spout happen on a lake in front of me and seen beauty and stuff. But the experience that we had totally forget that Mississippi happened.
If it was just a Memphis
if
trip.
If it just was that one day,
yeah.
it was the best.
Yeah, that was a great day. It was a really good day.
I definitely broke down in the parking lot after, because you just feel it. You feel it all. It gets you.
Yeah, and we were talking to the tour guide about how they do recording there. Like
$200 an hour. That's not bad.
No, you can go and record in Sun Studios.
We're good enough to do it.
Yeah, we just need the $200 an hour.
Which probably translates to like a grand.
Yeah.
Exclusive content on our Patreon, folks.
Yeah.
Back to that. You know. But anyways, so moving forward, we had kind of this like, and you know, we've never talked about this like publicly as a band. I don't think we've really dove into it super deep as a band, but I feel like it's an important thing to put to bed the change of our band. Because we gear up at the end of 2016 for what we thought was going to be a really special show for us. We were going to do the culmination of our work, what we had set out to do from the beginning, which was do the entire Famous Monsters album by the Misfits. And
yeah, for a benefit.
We kind of put that era of the band down.
Yeah, that we chucked that shit and moved on to Danzig.
And you know, it's not that those songs.
I mean, we played great. It was a good show for us. It was just venue issues, sound issues, stuff like that. You know, whatever. We didn't want to do that anymore.
Not being put on till 2 a.m.
Yeah. That was a rough show for us, but we decided that we didn't want to do the Graves stuff anymore. None of us were really into Michael Graves as a person, you know, and we just mostly wanted this to be about I want this to be just about an energy, and that energy is Danzig.
Yeah, I totally feel
that.
I mean,
you can't
too.
Fucking top it.
No, you know? No, not at all. The thing that's really interesting to me is that we are, you know, do we do this show? We go on super late. The whole thing just sucks. We were there, like, we drove a long distance, you know. It was essentially, as a musician, the worst case scenario gig that they talk about was this show for us.
I mean, at least we still had people to play to. It's not like there wasn't anybody there or anything.
That's true. It was just extraordinarily late.
Mm-hmm.
But this happens, and January of 2017, we just said, let's just start doing all Danzig sets and go with it.
Yeah.
And never look back. And I don't think we meant to never look back, but like the day we played those songs on that stage has been the last time we've touched them.
Yeah. Last 2016.
Yeah. So I think that it was an important change.
And it was
for
right
us.
Around New Year's, yeah. Which I thought was important because, you know, we, in the New Year's about resolutions and starting over in a whole new year,
and
whole
change.
New project.
Yeah, totally. And we evolved to be what
Yeah, I
we
think
are
we
now.
Leveled up. If this was a video game, I think we leveled up.
I think, and I believe we say that there are certain circumstances, there are certain shows we have had where we leave those shows, and I think we go, "Hey, did you guys feel that? We totally leveled up."
Yeah,
because it's just like there's definitely.
I feel like the day we got the show with our name on a marquee, that was a big level up. That was like a boss battle, and we leveled up.
That was crazy. That was an amazing show for us. You know. I also get the honor of traveling with you at all these shows. You're my travel buddy.
Yeah.
And we spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised you're not annoyed by of me by now. But how has it been, like, kind of touring? Because that's different. Listen, I played shows and did that thing, and this is different. Like, I don't know how to quantify that it's different, but what do you feel when we play places that are all over? Like, what are
those experiences?
It
makes it feel more real for me.
Okay.
Like, when we go out of town for shows, like, when we go to, where the hell were we? In Wisconsin.
Oh, we were in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yeah. Yeah, duh.
Milwaukee.
Okay. Milwaukee, which is Algonquin for the good land.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway. Yeah, like when we go to places like Milwaukee or when we went out to Fort Wayne and down to Indy and all of these places, it makes it more real for me. Like, what I'm doing matters, you know? Other people are counting on me, and that makes me feel good because I get to do what I really enjoy with my best friends, and we're getting paid to do it. And we have fun, and it makes it seem like I'm in a real band, you know?
Yeah, it feels nice, definitely.
Yeah, so, and I love traveling with you. We always have great conversations and always get a lot of productive band-oriented stuff done.
Well,
and podcast-oriented stuff done.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of our best ideas, if they're even good, but some of our best ideas, in my opinion, come from when we're traveling.
Yeah, I can totally vibe with that. And it's really cool to have, like, every show has something I call the letdown.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily mean you, like, feel bad, but you come down from being on stage in front of people doing a thing. And it's so fun that a lot of times you and I, the come down is a long car drive for, like, 2 hours. And sometimes the conversations get interesting and our brains go to bizarre places and you miss shooting stars, like fucking 7 of them.
I never see them.
Historically, I don't know how you do it. Like, Like, look out the windows. Like, it's nice.
And all I'm doing is looking out the windows.
Yeah, I know.
Still miss them.
Never on that spot in space. So we were talking about different things. What do you think was your favorite like show that we've done? I don't know that actually about you.
A favorite show? I don't know. We play a lot of fun ones. We played a lot of not so fun ones, but I still have fun doing it. But I think maybe the one that sticks out to me the most was when we played the punk rock night at the Melody Inn for the first time. We did that in January.
Yeah, January 21st.
Yeah. Can you believe it? It hasn't, it's like...
Not even been a year since that. It feels like it's been a lifetime ago.
I know. I feel like we've leveled up several times since that show. Like, our shows just keep getting better and better, folks, you know?
Yeah.
But that was probably the most memorable one for me, apart from our first show, obviously.
Okay.
Because I felt... different at that show. We weren't doing any Graves stuff. We were just doing straight up Danzig Misfits.
We brought some of the like hardest Misfits.
Oh, we went
there.
Really hard.
That was the first time we debuted Bullet at that show.
That was our debut of Bullet.
And Vampyra and Horror Hotel.
Yeah.
Like, because that was one thing that I love about you as a person is that if I task you, like, hey, we're going to learn four more new Misfits songs this week.
Oh, I'll complain about it.
You will,
but I'll do it.
You'll kick ass at doing it. You won't just do it. You'll do it at your fucking top level. Don't not give yourself credit. Jesus.
Well, so, we've been doing this so long now, I feel like you say, okay, we're going to learn Earth AD, and then we just play it like it's already done. It's already
second
done.
Second nature.
Already
yep.
done. Yep.
And that's funny because leading into us playing all these shows, I gave everybody a CD that I put together of like a strong majority of the Misfits catalog on one disc.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have every song, had a lot of the songs, had all but like 17 of the tracks.
Right.
And it never left any of our CD players for like the whole...
Yeah, we learned all of those fucking Misfits songs really fast. And I don't know... There's a lot of words. There's a lot of ridiculous words. So it was hard, but it was fun. And yeah, we just kind of did it. But
you know,
I was saying, like, that punk rock night show we played at the Mel,
uh-huh,
that one felt different to me because we were at a punk rock venue where people actually came to see our band, which I thought was really fucking cool. Like, people were excited to see our band. And I went outside to have a cigarette, and... there was people talking about our band out there, like, oh yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing them. Oh yeah, well, I heard about them. I saw their video on YouTube or whatever. And I just was like, fuck, that's cool.
Like, that's me. Oh shit.
Yeah, and I waved, and because they were looking at me, I was like, hi. And I was like, I'm from Walk Among Us. And they're like, oh my God, that's awesome, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, ugh. Yeah, this is dope. Like, people actually wanted to hear Misfits songs at that show, and that's why I think it was so fun, because I got really stoked off of everybody's energy and excitement about hearing this really weird Misfits tribute, like piano tribute. Everybody's like, I just don't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect. And then everybody loved it, and they lost their minds, and they partied with us, and it was really fun.
It was.
I was super grateful that everybody liked it.
It was a hell of a lot of fun, and yeah. I think... that there have been a couple of those shows. Lafayette, the last time we played Lafayette was fun. That was the marquee show.
Oh, yeah, the Lafayette Theater. That was a fun show.
And a lot of our friends came out for that, and people we didn't know were jamming, and that mm-hmm. was a fun vibe. And then, like, we played the Milwaukee show. And that. I mean, it's weird because you talk about these shows, every show is awesome.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about, like, every show, because every show, in my opinion, has something... like memorable, you know, unforgettable or mm-hmm. whatnot.
And we're going to be playing a lot of shows this month.
Yeah.
Like,
starting next weekend.
This is the season. We're gearing up.
Tis our season.
Yeah.
You know?
Tis our season.
And man, next weekend's hugely busy. I mean, two shows and like five podcasts. It's going to be insanity. But it's going to be so much. It's going to be so worth it when everything is all said and done. The thing that we're going to be doing next weekend is going to be, I'm really stoked on that. So speaking of podcasts, because we haven't even touched on this side of you yet.
Mm-hmm.
I turned you into a podcaster.
Yeah.
What's up with that? How does, like, what was the first podcast you listened to, actually? Because I don't know that.
Yours.
Really?
Yeah.
Genuinely?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you had had, like...
I never listened to podcasts before I met you.
So let's talk about it.
I had never listened to a podcast. I didn't really know what the fuck a podcast even was. I knew about... the only thing I knew about podcasts was Serial. And just because I kept seeing it all over when that was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, that sounds like a really cool idea. I should get into that. But I never did because I was a mom. And I didn't have time to... commit to listening to somebody else talk about shit they like, you know. I just didn't, it wasn't my thing. And then when I heard your podcast, I really liked the platform you had, and I thought this would be a really fun, interesting way for us to spend more time together, you know. And it has been, like, we have a lot of different ways that we spend time together, and podcasting is definitely a fun one.
I feel like it just goes without saying, we pretty much spend almost all the ways of spending time together as people.
Yeah.
You know, we get to go and do crazy shows together. We get to see crazy shows together.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw the OG Misfits together.
Oh my God, Riot Fest was so fun.
I mean, to go back to that for a minute, to talk about all the... We've eaten so many different foods together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good experiences, bad experiences. You ordered, to speak about, to go back to the May Jerry the King Lawler incident.
Mm-hmm.
You ordered deep fried ribs, and after the fact, I realized you did not even get deep fried ribs.
No, they messed up my order.
They totally messed up your order. Mm-hmm. But we were too, like, in the moment and star-stricken that Jerry was actually there. Because mm-hmm. I remember driving there, and I was just like, guys, wouldn't it just be hilarious if Jerry the King just showed up? That'd just be hilarious. And I think you guys were just both like, it's probably not going to happen, but yeah, that'd be cool.
No, like, I said it would be really fucking cool if he was going to be there, and you were like, no, he's probably filming, blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
and I was like, nah. In the back of my mind, I was like, that motherfucker's going
to
be there.
Well, it was a Sunday, and it just worked to our favor.
Yeah, and his restaurant had just recently opened at that point, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it was still pretty new. I think it had only mm-hmm. been about a month or so.
But he was super cool. He was super sweet.
Yeah,
and we took pictures with him
in the king's chair.
In the king's chair. Yeah,
I can't believe I screwed that up on Journey in the Comics 150.
God.
To go back to that. So we start doing Foodies now. Season one of Foodies, which was like kind of disjointed few episodes of kind of figuring what we did and didn't want to do out.
Mm-hmm.
How have you felt season two is going? We have a new co-host. We have a lot of big changes to how the show goes. As someone who is now more into the podcasting world, far removed from where this all began, I mean, what's that like for you on this side of it now?
I think season two is going to be much better than season one. Not to say season one wasn't cool for what it was.
It was just a different experience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think season two is going to be really fun. We've already done a few, and I'm so happy that we have a new co-host with us, Lauren. Shout out to Lauren. She and I have been Facebook friends for like 2 years or so through mutual friends and stuff like that. And I kept seeing her posts on Facebook, and I was like, I need to be better friends with this girl because she seems so interesting and quirky and weird. And she posts about a lot of the same shit that I like. And I thought, this girl's cool. I need to be friends with her. So I invited her out for breakfast one day, and we became friends. And now we invited her to be on our podcast as a guest, and she did so great. You said we need to just have her as a co-host, and I was like, definitely.
She's super knowledgeable, and she has good taste in movies.
She has great taste in movies. And
spoiler alert for this Wednesday's Foodies Watching Movies coming up, folks.
Yeah, we're gonna be recording another podcast soon, so. Yeah, I think that it's going well. I like the direction that it's going. It's much more breezy, and there's not a lot of dead air because there's, you know, four adults talking about all the shit that they like, you know?
Yeah. So I'm going to throw a bizarre question at you, and I just wanted you to take me to a moment.
Okay.
I don't care where it is in time, but I want you to think about your, like, favorite life memory you have had so far. I mean, not to really put you on the spot, but to totally put you on the spot. Under pressure. Just take your time and think about it. But, you know, there's a lot of different things that can quantify as favorite. I'm just thinking about something that...
Ugh. I have a favorite life memory.
Okay, sure. Please share.
My one... It's got to be my number one memory. My favorite life memory is the day I gave birth to my son and holding him for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that completely changed my life. And it was everything that I had been waiting for. And it was a perfect memory.
Yeah, you and Ollie have a very special bond.
Yeah.
He's your little punk rocker kid.
Oh, he's just magnificent. And so weird and funny and such a monster of a little boy and very sweet and compassionate, but also he's got some attitude and he's sassy. He's the best.
He's very, very sassy.
He's very sassy. He's a sassafras. But he's beautiful and so smart and so sweet. And I'm so grateful to be his mom. And so that's my favorite memory is when I was holding him for the first time and just looking at him, and he was looking directly at me, and I have pictures of it, and it's so sweet.
That's.
It was like our eyes had laser beams in each other's, and we just like stared at each other for the longest time.
You guys have an inseparable bond.
Yeah.
It's really been fun to see him grow into who he's becoming.
Yeah, you've known him since he was a little baby.
Yep. Before he knew words,
mm-hmm.
actually, which was crazy. I remember we can go back to when he used to call Sarah Da.
Yeah, he couldn't say Sarah. He would say Da.
Yep.
So, aww.
Yeah, it's been awesome making memories with you. We have so many more memories to make, I feel.
Well, here's hoping.
Look, we're only 3 years in what I feel like is a pretty long-term journey. So just moving forward, I'm very grateful that I've had you in my life. I'm grateful that we met. You are an extraordinarily talented person who I don't think gives theirself enough credit. Sometimes you give yourself enough credit. Sometimes you feel the thunder. But, you know, it's just perfect. It's exactly who you are.
Oh,
you know,
thanks.
And I think that says a lot about your character. Before we go, is there anything that we didn't touch on today that you are like, how the fuck did this guy miss this shit? Like, what? We were supposed to talk about this because it's part of my life, and he missed it. Like, have I missed anything really big? I feel like,
I don't know. I don't know what I don't know what you really wanted me to talk about today, other than what we've talked about. I've led a very interesting sounding life. I mean, I hope it sounds interesting. You're obviously listening to a podcast about people's lives, so you might be interested. But I don't know. I've done a lot of cool things. I've gone to a lot of cool places.
Coolest place you've ever been?
Oh, coolest place I've ever been. Fuck, I don't know. Probably, I really liked London.
Okay, London's awesome.
Yeah,
never been,
I went to London in college. I loved London. It was really cool because I was studying history at Purdue, and I got to go to all of the museums and see tons of shitty plays. And I love British. You know, I took this British theater and culture class, and I loved every minute of it. It was so cool. It was really interesting being in this place that I've always wanted to be in. It also felt like, man, thinking about all the different places that I've traveled, like I've been to Australia and Bali and Mexico and London and all these different states and places. It all just kind of, it always still seems like I'm in a new place when I'm there. Like it hasn't lost its luster. You know, because sometimes when I'm traveling to like different towns or cities in the U.S., I feel like everything is the same. Everything is so fucking the same. But then when you go abroad, you know, everything really does feel different. And that's what I love about traveling. And I want to encourage other people to do it.
I think that's something that you encouraged me to do, and I wish we could. I mean, we do a lot of traveling because the band, mm-hmm. but I wish we could do a lot more traveling.
I wish
abroad.
We could do a lot more traveling too.
Because abroad sounds fun. Like, yeah, just going to somewhere that's not where we are.
You know? Maybe someday our band can go on a tour somewhere.
A tour in Japan.
Oh, that would be so cool, wouldn't it? I really want a tour in South America because they love the Misfits in South America.
Yes, they do. We have a large, any of our Walk Among Us fans are listening, we do have a large fan base down there. So,
yeah, that would be a really great place to travel. I've always wanted to go to Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be something that we need to check off of the list, I think.
I'll make a list for you, and we'll just start checking them off.
Sure, I'm totally into that. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and officially being my fifth guest today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
It's really bizarre because as many podcasts as I've done, I feel like The Voice of Survival is this tiny little new baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I get nervous doing it a little bit. So it was, I'm pleasantly surprised that I kept it all together and didn't go into crazy wild tangents and totally forget the point of today. I think we've done a really good job of highlighting how cool you are.
I mean, well, thanks.
When I met you, I just thought you were one of the coolest people I ever met.
Wow.
So
thank you.
So I'm just,
well, I obviously felt the same way, you know, we were interested in a lot of the same things and, you know, priorities, you know.
Yeah, moving forward. I'm excited.
Me too.
But before we go, as always, I got to do all the different plugs. That's just a part of the fact of life.
It.
You guys know how it goes. So we'll start with social media plugs for The Voice of Survival. You can check out me, The Voice of Survival podcast, on Facebook. Just search Voice of Survival podcast. You can also get us on Twitter at Voice of Survival. Get me on Instagram at The Voice of Survival Podcast. As always, if you really feel so inclined, you can friend me on Facebook, The Voice of Survival. That's mine. You can check out all the different shows on the Journey into Comics Network, including this one, The Voice of Survival, at www.journeyintocomics.com or on all the amazing different podcasting services like Podbean, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, YouTube, Google Play Music, Overcast, Downcast, Podcast Addict, Pod Chaser. There's like there's too many. There's so many. Gosh, there's lots.
You can also hear our podcast, Foodies Watching Movies, on all the same platforms.
Yeah, and before we go ahead and do you have some things you can plug, like different outlets, or do you want me to do the plugs for all the things that you do for you?
Well, you can check out our band, Walk Among Us. We've got our Bandcamp, walkamongus.bandcamp.com, and you can download our cut of Horror Business for free. We're working on some new material to be released soon, someday.
Yeah.
We'll see. Stay tuned.
Keep your eyes on that Instagram at Walk Among Us Band.
Yeah, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that jazz.
Twitter, yeah. Mm-hmm. Foodies Watching Movies for the podcasting stuff.
Yeah, if you want to see some interesting food pictures that we all make and consume, that's where you need to look.
We're going to have a fun time recording tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. As always, folks, check out all the different shows on Journey into Comics Network, whether it be Journey into Comics, Game Addicts Podcast, Journey into Wrestling, Foodies Watching Movies, The Voice of Survival Podcast. That's me.
You going to plug all of them?
The Poor Rapport, Podcastrophe, and Butt Stuff Podcast. Veronica, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome here anytime. I feel like what is going to happen is at some point in the near future, Voice of Survival is going to become a revolving door where I just bring the same people I've already had on back to not necessarily
do a catch-up episode.
To not necessarily just catch up, but to like talk current topics and stuff and like what's going on in our world, because there's a lot of views that we didn't get to get into that we share on the the world works.
That's
and stuff
true.
I would love
to. This is just like
to.
An interview episode.
Yeah, totally. I want people to get to know you, and I want them to get to know everybody who's been on the Voice of Survival podcast. Again, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you. Let's get pizza now.
Sure. Oh my God, that was the best tag out of an episode ever. So folks, this is Nate for the Voice of Survival podcast. Thank you again, Veronica.
Thank you.
I've been Nate.
I'm Veronica.
This was the Voice of Survival podcast. Out.